Good morning, members, and good morning, Representative Erickson and our Mille Lacs County crew. We don't have quorum here yet, but I'm inclined to have us get started and have the discussion. We can call the meeting to order, approve the minutes, etc., once we do get quorum. But in the meantime, welcome, Representative Erickson, and if you would, wouldn't mind introducing your bill and introducing your guests.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. This is House File 3459, and when we have quorum, there's a delete all amendment that either the Chair or I will offer. This is in response, this House File, to the early closure of Lake Mille Lacs last August because of the walleye situation. The governor, as you may recall, requested a working group, which Representative Hackbarth and Senator Thomasoni led. Our working group met for three meetings, but came to no conclusion as to calling a special session, which is what Governor Dayton had requested. But we did hear a lot of ideas from the Department of Revenue and DEED in regard to providing relief. And so over the interim and into this session, I have worked on several proposals and today have before you House File 3459, which, as I said earlier, we will offer, or I will offer, a delete all to it. We're focusing, members, or will, when we actually get into the meat of the bill, in this committee on Sections 2 and 3. And Mr. Chair, there's still not quorum.
There is not.
But may I call on House Research to explain Sections 2 and Section 3? Mr. Klayman and Mr. Hines have worked with me on these. Perhaps we want to start with Mr. Klayman on Section 2 of the bill.
That would be good, Representative Erickson. It might be good for them to also just kind of outline how the bill works and practically how the abatements work as well. Mr. Klayman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Erickson. So looking at the delete everything amendment, the DE2 amendment, the first section is the economic relief program. And that's somewhat separate from Sections 2 and 3, which contain the provisions relating to property taxes. Section 2, so that's page 2, line 18 of the DE2 amendment, authorizes the counties of Aiken, Crow Wing, and Mille Lacs to grant an abatement of taxes for pay 2016. The county is then authorized to retain a portion of the state general levy that they collect on behalf of the state in an amount equal to the amount of local tax that they abate under Section 2. So in a sense, the retention of that portion of the state levy by the county functions as a reimbursement for the local abatement. There is also an auditing provision in Section 2 and some clarification about whether an appeal to the tax court can be made if a county board grants an abatement under that section. Moving on to page 3 of the DE2, the state general levy portion, I think maybe too it would be helpful to just reference what areas surrounding the lake would be covered by the language in Section 2 and 3. So Section 2 would apply, if I could backtrack, Section 2 would apply to first, you have to be a business in one of the 14 cities or towns directly surrounding the lake. In addition, under Section 2, you'd have to meet the requirements set up to qualify for grants or loans under the relief program established in Section 1. For Section 3, the state levy abatement, there's no tie back to the qualification provision of Section 1 in the relief program. So any property with the classification in Section 3, which would be commercial industrial property, also seasonal resorts, marinas, restaurants on a lake would be able to apply for a refund of the state levy. Again, in the economic relief area consisting of the 14 cities and towns surrounding the lake. And the way that the refund would work is that a taxpayer could apply for the refund, and then the bill provides that that portion of the state levy that's refunded is not due to be remitted to the state as it is under current law. And then section 4 contains the appropriation, and I think I would just point out that the both the appropriation for the relief program established in section 1, the authorization to provide local abatements and retain the state levy in section 2, and then the state levy refund in section 3 are 1 year only. So pay 2016 for the property tax provisions, and then I believe it's fiscal 2017 for the relief program.
Thank you, Mr. Klayman.
Thank you, Mr. Klayman. And so compared to the original bill, then the delete everything kind of narrowed down the scope of years. Is that right, Representative Erickson?
That okay. is correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Members, we do have quorum, so the chair will call the meeting to order. And with that, we will take a look at the minutes quickly. And the chair would entertain a motion for their approval if anyone has one. Representative Vogel. Representative Vogel moves approval of the minutes from March 30th. Any additions or corrections or discussion on the minutes from March 30th? Hearing none, all in favor of approving the minutes from March 30th signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. Those minutes are adopted. And with that, Representative Erickson moves House File 3459 to be laid over. And also Representative Erickson moves the DE2 delete everything amendment to House File 3459, and that's where we're at currently. Representative Erickson, you have some guests with you that may want to talk about the context of this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The relief portion of this delete all will be heard in jobs growth this afternoon at 12:45. So we're looking at these in two sections, and that'll be 3458. So I ran parallel identical bills to facilitate the movement of this proposal. The governor has been engaged and will continue to be engaged. So I've been working closely with his staff, and I know this afternoon the Department of Revenue and Dee will both make some suggestions as to how to tighten Section 1. But this morning we want to deal with Section 2, and with me is Pat Ullman, who is the Mille Lacs County Administrator, who has worked in these kinds of situations before, having come to Mille Lacs County from Carleton County, and Commissioner Dave Oslin, who represents the area in Mille Lacs County that surrounds the lake. We have chosen 14 townships and the cities within because in the working group, that is the area that Deed focused on. So that is why we have come back to that conclusion that that's the best area to look at. And Commissioner Oslin has worked closely with the commissioner from Crow Wing and the commissioner from Aiken who represent those sides of Mille Lacs. As you know, Lake Mille Lacs has three counties that it is a part of. And so those commissioners have been very much involved with Commissioner Oslin in talking about this relief package and providing for possible abatement and refund of the statewide business property tax. So, Mr. Chair, I think maybe you would like to call on Mr. Ullman, the county administrator.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Welcome, Mr. Ullman. Please introduce yourself and for the record and welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Pat Ullman. I'm the county administrator with Mille Lacs County.
Welcome, Mr. Ullman. Would you like to tell us about your testimony?
Yes, sir. Thank you, and thank you for the opportunity. At Mille Lacs County, and this was discussed when we testified earlier, Mille Lacs County is one of the higher taxed counties within the state of Minnesota. I believe we are in the top five.
And we're in one of the highest tax states in the country, Mr. Ullman, so you're not doing real good.
Yes, sir. That's very correct. Yeah, and the big challenge that Mille Lacs County has is in its economy. It's been very successful with tourism throughout its history, Mille Lacs Lake being one of the chief tourism income entities within the county. The real challenge is what happens is when that goes away, and when we have all our eggs in one basket, we run into some real challenges. This is one of the bigger ones. With the lack of fishing, it's affected our businesses significantly up in that area. And of course, as we meet every year to develop our budget within Mille Lacs County, we hear it very much from our homeowners and our business owners. We want our local taxes kept low, and the county board is given a real positive direction to be as frugal as the county can be in that regard. But the challenges that we run into is, as revenue falls for these businesses, expenses stay the same. Taxes. Running a business, even though that revenue isn't coming in, it really has to be addressed with some legislation for the state. So we're very happy that you as a chair in this group is going to at least consider this bill. We do feel that given the time of allowing for that abatement opportunity for our businesses will give us the time to grow and diversify our economy in Mille Lacs County and also to address other programs that could assist our businesses. But right now we need a gap assistance, and this is what I would see it. It's a one-year commitment within the bill, but we do feel it would be a very important commitment for our businesses within the county.
Thank you, Mr. Ullman. And Mr. Ullman, I have been to the Sunrise Cafe, and Lori Westerl, and what a gem of a person you have there. Is she in Aiken County or Mille Lacs County?
Just shows at the border. Yes.
Okay, you should adopt her because she's an awesome individual.
You make that motion, I'll make it happen.
you get her taxes then too. By the way, 6,400 slices of pie, homemade pie, that she would have to sell in order to pay off the state general tax on her small business there located in the lake. By the way, how many miles is it across the lake? I've fished on it many times, but how many miles is it one side or the other?
It's about 20, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Osland. With that, please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Dave Osland, Mille Lacs County Commissioner. Thank you, and thanks to Representative Erickson, members, for hearing this. It is about 20 miles across the lake. It's about 70 around it. I appreciate your comments about Commissioner Westerland. In the efforts here, in our county administrator explained quite thoroughly what we're looking at here, but I would like to add to that Representative Erickson's comments about the three counties, Crow Wing, Aiken, and Mille Lacs, because of the severity of what we're facing there. And we did form together, and we have a committee with the graces of our respective county boards. And we do have four commissioners involved because all four touch the lake. And it's Commissioner Westerland, Commissioner Comings from Crow Wing, and also Commissioner Neamey from Aiken. There are two. And some of you folks know Commissioner Neamey because I believe he's been down here speaking with you folks about the state tax. So we are concerned, and of course, Mille Lacs County has the biggest oar in the water, so to speak, on this one. My district alone is responsible for over one-third of Mille Lacs County's tax base with the four townships that touch the lake and the three towns. So it's significant. And again, with the efforts here and last year, the efforts were with the special committee and hopefully to get to a special session, which we didn't. But in through that process, Deed was involved heavily as the Commissioner of Revenue, too. There was a lot of good ideas came forward out of that that we can play off of. And unfortunately, it didn't happen, but we kind of set the stage as to what we're talking about here today. And we certainly saw the need for it back then. So as far as how you folks, with Representative Erickson's crafting of these things, how you folks look at it, we appreciate the look at it in general. And one theme that came out of that earlier through the governor meeting with some of the tourism folks up there, was that when the lake comes back, and I firmly believe the lake will come back. I also serve on the new DNR advisory committee up there. But when it comes back, we need our businesses to still be there. We've already lost 21 resorts on Mille Lacs Lake in the last few years. So, you know, that being said, I think that was the theme, as Administrator Oman mentioned too, that we need to survive and thrive for when that magic day comes. So, again, thank you for letting us be here today and for hearing this.
Thank you, Commissioner Oslin. So, members, we have not adopted the author's amendment yet. Any particular questions for the author on the author's amendment? Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the DE2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The DE amendment is adopted.
And Mr. Chair, Paul Cummings from the Department of Revenue is here as a resource to lend support from the governor's office.
Oh, awesome. Mr. Cummings? Thank you. Thank you, Representative Erickson. Welcome, Mr. Cummings. I want to hear your walleye story on Mille Lacs Lake, Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I was born in Aiken, Minnesota, so we did
so
spend...
So you did have fillets in the freezer at one point.
There was, yes, we have had many a fish from Mille Lacs and neighboring lakes. So I wanted to come here today, Mr. Chair, to express the support of Governor Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Tina Smith for this bill. I know that the governor and the department have spent a lot of time on this issue throughout the past year, and wanted to just thank Representative Erickson for bringing this piece of legislation forward. We also wanted to thank staff for really reaching out and trying to collaboratively figure out this effort. So as the Dayton-Erickson-Draskowski bill moves forward, Mr. Chair, we just appreciate continuing to work with you to talk about the various details and thresholds in order to make this work.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings.
Thanks.
Members, questions for Mr. Cummings before he heads? He'll be here for other bills, I take it. Okay.
He's going to go to the lake.
He's going to go get his jigs ready. Any questions that members have for any of the testifiers at this point? One question I would have, and then Representative Quam has a question. Mr. Klayman, could you just operationally help us understand as I read the amendment? So the state general levy is held by the county and used to tell us how this works.
Mr. Chair, yes, that's correct. So the state levy is due from taxpayers in two halves of the year, the first half and the second half. And the taxpayer will remit that to the county, who then has to hold on to it until, I believe, the final settlement date. So currently the county would be holding on to a certain portion of the state general levy. So what the bill would do is it would allow the county to hold on to whatever portion of the state general levy they would need to cover the local abatements, instead of sending that or remitting it to the state by the deadlines established. Again, in an amount equal to the amounts that the county has decided to abate under the special authority granted under Section 2.
So, Mr. Klayman, what would happen with the portion of the general levy that might not be needed at that point to pay the abatement?
Mr. Chair, I guess just to clarify, so there are really two areas kind of in play with the state general levy in this particular bill. For the 14 cities and towns directly surrounding the lake, each taxpayer would be eligible for a refund or, I guess, an abatement of that state general tax. So I suppose in theory, there would be no state levy that would need to be remitted from those 14 cities and towns, provided that every taxpayer would want to have that abated. And then the rest of the state general levy from each county could be used, in a sense, to fund the local property tax abatements for those cities and towns directly surrounding the lake. After that portion has been withheld from the state levy in the countywide area, the remaining portion would then be remitted to the state treasury as required under statute 276.112.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure who might have the data. I'm just curious of, you know, what percentage of the property in the county is on the tax rolls, and then your tax capacity for the county, what percentage is made up by business, you know, property tax?
Mr. Roslin?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe we have about 18.5 million tax capacity, and of that, for the business portion, is about 2.5 million for Mille Lacs County.
Representative Quam. Other questions, members?
Mr. Chair, there is a preliminary note from the Department of Revenue that you might want to take a look at. It sets down some amounts of that.
And Ms. Schill has a summary as well. Ms. Schill, can you comment on the fiscal impacts?
Yes, members, and Representative Erickson. You'll find two items, one of which is in your packet, one of which I have. You have a revenue estimate that really addresses the entire bill. Only a portion of that is in the jurisdiction of this committee. So on this mini spreadsheet of all the fiscal impacts of the bills for today, this is item number two, House File 3459. You'll see the appropriation line, Lake Mille Lacs Area Economic Relief Program. That's the $5 million that is appropriated in fiscal 17 for the bill. That is the deed portion. But right under that, you'll see the line entitled Local Property Tax Abatements and Refunds. The estimate from the Department of Revenue for those local abatements is $1 million. And then below that, you'll see the state general levy refund impact of approximately $450,000. And then there's an income tax interaction that actually offsets that $450,000. It is a negative, meaning it's a positive revenue. It's less spending of $40,000. And then the line right below that is the preliminary fiscal note estimate of the administrative costs. This is actually for the original bill, House File 3458. And in conversation with Department of Revenue yesterday, they have stated that they feel that the administrative costs would be less than $5,000 in fiscal 17, which makes that impact negligible. That is the summary of the bill, Mr. Chair. You'll see the total general fund impact in fiscal 17 of $6.4 million.
Thank you, Ms. Schill. Other questions, members? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Schill, probably the $1 million in local property tax abatements, does that figure represent an entire abatement, or is it a portion, or the entire local property tax portion?
Ms. Schill.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, that is the portion associated with the designated relief area and the local property that would be abated there, and that's up to the county to make that decision.
Representative Anderson.
So it's not the entire property tax base. It is those properties which the county, each of the counties, declared to be abated.
Representative Anderson.
Okay, thanks again, Mr. Chair. So I guess my question is, for a business or a resort who would be eligible for this abatement, is it a 100% abatement, or is it a portion of their tax bill?
Ms. Schill.
Mr. Chair and members, Mr. Klayman, do you have that information?
Mr. Klayman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, the Section 2 authorizes the County Board to abate taxes payable for 2016, but that's discretionary, so they could go 100% or 50% or...
Okay, other questions? Thank you, Mr. Klayman. Other questions, members? Representative McDonald, I'm sorry, I have you on the list, and then Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question, you know, there's no certainty in life, but it is evident that under this economic relief program that if you allow businesses and counties and the local jurisdictions to keep more of their hard-earned money, that creates an economic relief, an economic boom. Otherwise, this bill wouldn't be in front of us. So if that's not evident, then I'm not sure what is in life. So there's no certainties, I understand, but is there any projections? Can the Department of Revenue comment or staff of what this economic relief program to create economic wealth in those counties, is there any projections of what that will create, what kind of financial economic boom will that create?
Does anyone want to comment on that? Any commissioner or Administrator Osmond, anything you would like to say?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. It's a real good question. I think this is about wealth creation. I'm just going to use your term. I use it quite a bit at Mille Lacs County. And with the expenses, with revenue being down for these businesses, they make a lot of tough decisions when revenue is not coming in and expenses are staying the same. By reducing those expenses for the time, it allows those businesses to continue to update their infrastructure, to update their business and keep their business moving forward. And if this bill isn't put into play, many small businesses, and many of you are aware of this because they're in your communities, they'll be thinking about ways to not provide services when Mille Lacs Lake opens back up. And so we're trying to poise our businesses to be able to continue to invest in their own infrastructure and their own businesses and to be able to be prepared for tourism to return when it does return, and also to invest in diversifying their current businesses. I think that's one of the big challenges. Mille Lacs Lake has been a great walleye fishing area, but we see what happens when it isn't for a year. It was a huge impact, and so we're working at the local level to diversify those businesses and provide other reasons for people to stay besides fishing.
Representative McDonald, this is relief to provide the relief while the fish are growing. Mm-hmm. Representative McDonald.
Yeah, very good. Well, yes, indeed, that's wonderful. And I am very pleased, and I'm sure you agree, that to know that our governor is in support of this bill and fully recognizes that if you allow businesses to keep more of their hard-earned money, that it creates economic wealth. I can imagine I'm a businessman from Delano. I have a small studio, my wife and I, and if we could keep more of our money that we earn in our, especially in commercial industrial tax we pay in our building, I would invest that into my business, perhaps hire some more folks and create even more wealth. That creates what? More taxes for our state to spend and distribute how they seem that it would best fit. So I'm glad that our governor recognizes the importance of this great bill, and thank you, Representative Erickson, for bringing it forth. Let us have this be a lesson throughout the whole state, not just Colerain County and the rest of them.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My apologies I missed this, but so in Section 2, the property tax abatement is limited to taxpayers that meet the qualification requirements, so the reduction in gross receipts and have to be a business in some of those industries. And Section 3 is not so limited, so any business in the economic relief area can receive the refund of the state general levy. And I'm just wondering why the limitation in Section 2 but not the limitation in Section 3.
Representative Erickson.
I think I'd like Mr. Klayman to address that as we have set out on Section 3.
Mr. Klayman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pinto, I think that's just the general scheme between Sections 2 and 3. Section 2 is... I think is geared toward providing specific relief to businesses who were affected by the decline in walleye fishing, where Section 3 I think is intended to be more of a broad area-wide aspect of the relief package.
Representative Pinto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess I'd maybe ask why not have Section 3 be targeted to businesses affected by the decline in fishing in the same way that Section 2 is. I'm not sure who that's for, but do you understand what I'm saying? So Section 2, in fact, is targeted, it sounds like, but Section 3 is kind of broader in the area, so why not target Section 3 in a similar way?
I would suspect that, maybe let's, Representative Erickson, if you have any comments on...
Well, Mr. Chair and members, this is a broad area, so the statewide business property tax is limited to the commercial section. But if we're going to provide relief, then I think we're thinking in terms of a broader scope. And the decision-making will be done by the county, Mille Lacs as the fiscal agent, I'll call them, as to whether or not there's qualifications. And Representative Pinto, we are working on refining the language in Section 1, working with DEED on tightening the parameters. So that may have an effect on how the language reads in Section 3, Subdivision 2 as well, or even Subdivision 1 as far as eligible property.
Thank you. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'll just note that, yeah, as the, because it seems like it ends up being pretty broad for Sections 1 and 2, which is great. I mean, it seems like there's a need for relief. I wonder if it might make sense to tie Section 3 in with those same qualifications then, just to be sure this targeted, especially if the qualifications are drawn by the county to make sure that businesses broadly are protected. So just might encourage the author to consider that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Thank you. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question, just so I'm trying to understand. Whenever we do abatements in this committee, we always talk about shifting onto other classifications of property. So I'm just trying to see how this plays with a local property owner who doesn't happen to be a business owner but might work on a business, say a charter fishing boat for resort, and they've lost their job because there's no more fishing or there's lower fishing. Are we shifting property tax burden? Are their properties going to increase in taxes when they don't have a job? So I'm glad we're helping the businesses out. I'm just trying to figure out how it affects local property owners that might not own a business.
Thank you. Well, let's ask Mr. Clayman. I don't think it shifts, but Mr. Clayman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Joaquin, yes, that's correct. There wouldn't be a shift because of the reimbursement from the state levy.
Thank you. Representative Simonson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to continue along the thought process that Representative Pinto was going down, because that was actually my question, too. And to be clear, I mean, I support this bill, and I'm glad you're bringing it forward. And I always appreciate bills that we don't have to politicize, because disaster relief is an important issue in Minnesota. But with respect to Section 3, and I'll just direct this to staff, I think, for clarity. And I think I heard Representative Erickson say that the county would be the one that would be taking the applications for the relief from the individual CI property tax businesses. And I'm just wondering where do we see the criteria that the county will use to evaluate the applications? And I think I'm hearing that perhaps is coming as we move this bill through the process. And if that's the case, that's fine. But perhaps if it's going to be there by the time it gets to the tax committee, that would just be good to know for me.
Mr. Clayman, you have a comment on that in the bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Simonson, in the DE2 amendment, page 1, line 16, with respect to the criteria and procedures to evaluate applications submitted to the relief program, that's part of the DE amendment, page 1. As far as Sections 2 and 3, that provision for criteria and procedure would not apply to applications for abatements under Section 2, and then Section 3 would be the same. It's more of a blanket refund of the state levy.
Representative Simonson.
Mr. Chair, and thank you for that. I understand what's in the bill now, but I'm just suggesting that as we go forward, I do think that there's logic in having some criteria in the bill itself, because right now it just applies to any business within this relief area that applies for the abatement, the way I read it. And I just think it makes sense for us as a state to have some criteria that we can define that, you know, this business was affected by this disaster. Some of the examples that were handed out earlier, you know, we have floodings, tornadoes, fires. These are pretty easy to comprehend what the impact is. But I just think that there needs to be some criteria that would allow the county to say, yes, you definitely qualify, and here's your abatement. It's just a suggestion before we get to the full tax committee.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, we are working on that in an email from the Department of Revenue. Based on the discussions that occurred during working group, they have recommended, as you have, Representative Simonson, that those businesses who have seen a decline in gross receipts due to the direct impact of the early closure are entitled to relief, as opposed to those businesses that may have experienced a decline due to other reasons. So we're going to be tightening that, and I appreciate your comments. Mr. Cummins also in his email suggested that 5% might be enough, but we're going to further research that to see if that's the correct percentage.
Thank you. Other questions, members? Hearing none, any final words, Representative Erickson or Mr. Ullman, Commissioner Oslin?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for taking the time to dig into this. This has been a work in progress for many months, and I appreciate any input that I can receive to make this a proposal that can be moved forward with the governor's approval to provide a relief so that the Lake Mille Lac area, Crow Wing County, Aiken County, Mille Lacs County can survive and then thrive as a result of the comeback of the lake. So we are repurposing Mille Lacs area, and that takes a lot of time and work. So I have a lot of faith in my county officials, my county commissioners, and of course those who own property around the lake. And those of you who heard the commissioner of Crow Wing mentioned, that's former Senator Coring, who is part of this working group, who's now a commissioner in Crow Wing County. So he has a pretty good knowledge of Lake Mille Lacs as well. But thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Committee.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. I think all of us at Fish in Minnesota are looking forward to that 30-inch walleye on Mille Lacs again. So with that, the Chair does lay over House File 3459 as amended.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let's, Representative Murphy, if you wouldn't mind bringing your guests up, and let's do your bill. Representative Murphy, welcome to the committee. And Representative Murphy, you are going to be telling us a little bit about Minnesota's newest city, or I don't know if it's the newest, but it's certainly one of the newest, if not the newest. Welcome, Representative Murphy.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. And yes, indeed, I'm proud to introduce you today to Minnesota's, what I know of as Minnesota's newest city, Rice Lake, which is in my district, just north of Duluth, just east of Hermantown, and over 100 years old in community. It was a township, and as a result of a vote in October by the citizens of Rice Lake is a city. So we let them get settled a little bit, and then went to visit, and one of the questions that came up was, what about our LGA, the local government assistance? And I said, well, I had to talk to my consultant, Ms. Dalton, about local government aid, because she's been my mentor on local government aid since I ever had a city. And as a result, and then following me, there was a visit from the senator of Senate District 3, which is Senator Bach, and he visited with Mayor Werner and Vice Mayor John Goldman, who is with us, and Joan Jouse, who has been their very able city clerk for many, many years. And the question arose with them, too. And so he initiated the bill, which is numbered 3602 in the House, and has since changed. But more than anything, I found out with my conversation with Ms. Dalton was that current law doesn't really provide for new monies when there's new cities, except that in 2013, I believe, the decision was made that it was a dollar per capita. And a dollar per capita in 2013 didn't buy very much, and in 2016 it buys even less. And so, but we should really discuss what happens to the whole concept of local government aid when a new city enters. And I'm sure population is an issue. I'm sure needs are an issue. I'm sure geography is part of the problem issue. And so I was delighted when this bill rose to the top, just like cream, and that you were willing to open the topic of the discussion. With me today is the proud mayor of the new city of Rice Lake, John Werner.
The first mayor, and welcome, Mr. Werner. Before we hear your discussion, the chair is going to move House File 3602 to be entertained and laid over. Mr. Werner, welcome, and you are the on the maiden voyage in the mayoral seat. If you would introduce yourself, sir, and then tell us about the bill and Rice Lake.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, my name is Mayor John Werner. I have been a lifelong resident of Rice Lake, except for a couple years where I was born on the Central Hillside of Duluth. My ancestors homesteaded Rice Lake Township. Roads were named after them when they homesteaded back in the 1880s. Rice Lake itself became a township in 1870. The interesting part about that is at the same time that Duluth received their city status in, I believe it was May of 1870, and we formed as a township and were recognized at that point in November of 1870. And again, we handed the packet out, and there's a lot of historical facts, but I do want to highlight some issues. We're the third largest community in the Duluth metro area. We have been for the past 25 years that I know of the sixth largest municipality in St. Louis County behind the city of Chisholm. And again, looking at the top 20% of the population in the state, and we're ranked 169th out of 854 cities in Minnesota, and I believe we're right behind Cannon Falls. We have a population of 4,100, and even though we're a township, we had instituted infrastructure, water, sewage, water tower, we have our own fire department, all of those amenities that the citizens required and had asked for over the years. And if those of you that know township government, at the annual meeting in March of every year, the citizens vote their own tax increases. And our taxes are high, but again, it goes back to not what the Board of Supervisors had presented, it's what the citizens on the floor wanted. In reference to our fire department, I want to make a highlight. We have a 30-member fire department. It's volunteer. That's a full manning. We have 23 that are first responder qualified. We have 6 that are EMT qualified. And again, with mutual aid with the townships and with the city and with the Air Guard at the air base, we all work cooperatively as far as supporting each other. And a couple years ago, we even sent one of our rigs south to the Moose Lake area for the summer months. With that, again, we're very proud of what we've accomplished as a township. And with the overtures from City of Duluth a couple years ago, wanting to take over our infrastructure, the citizens were very vocal at 3 town meetings. The first meeting, when the news broke, the town hall, even though it's a large town hall, was packed. They were standing room only in the assembly hall. They were in the hallways, and the doors were even open, and they were standing outside. We listened to both parties, but the citizens themselves were very vocal, even at the administrative judge's hearing, that they wanted to remain Rice Lake. And so at that, with the cooperation of the City of Duluth, we ventured into the application for city status. That went very well, even though it took almost a year. And it was evident from her findings that Rice Lake had already administered and lived and serviced their community as a city, so it became a very good issue for us, and that's how we became, quite frankly, since 2013, Minnesota's newest city. And that's what brings us here today. But again, if I can leave with one thought, that the citizens of Rice Lake are very appreciative of the opportunity to appear at the legislature and the support of our legislative representatives as we grow as a city. There are unknowns as we do this. We're learning every day. We were very well versed as what a township does and the rules that govern townships. Again, the city status, it is a learning process for us. We have four full-time employees. We have 9 part-time employees, and that's what we've operated for a number of years. With that, sir, that concludes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Werner. I'm wondering, Ms. Dalton, can you kind of give us some background on the LGA, how this impacts the rest of the LGA pool?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as many of you know, we had a new LGA formula adopted in 2013, and that LGA formula allows cities to start with a base of whatever they were getting in the previous year, and then increases or decreases to the city are based on how close they are to their aid gap, how much they need versus how much they can raise with what they're currently getting in LGA and what they can get with an average tax base. Unfortunately, it might be an oversight, but it just didn't occur to us because it doesn't happen that often. When a township becomes a city, they aren't getting LGA under the city LGA formula. They're getting township LGA. That doesn't carry over, so they start with a base of 0. They do get because their gap is so big, because they're getting no aid, they do get disproportionately more of any increase available, but it's not very much. So, for instance, when Rice Lake was a town, it was getting about $250.
$250, and last year was $203, sir.
In town LGA. Without any change in this law, they will go to $5,000 in LGA because they're only going to get a share of the amount that's available for increases, which is not very much this year. It's about $2 million. If this bill was passed, they would get about $46,000. The city of Rice Lake has a population of 4,100. What does this mean for other cities? It means other cities who are would get an increase under current law would lose a little bit. And to give you an example, instead of, I know how much Minneapolis is losing, so let me find what they're currently getting as projected to get as an increase.
Well, you're digging for that, Ms. Dalton, so they actually wouldn't get a decrease, but they would get a smaller increase. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's correct. Anyone who's getting a decrease will not be affected by this. Anyone who has zero aid or is not getting any increases will not be affected. The only thing that will happen is that some cities who would be getting an increase under current law would get a slightly smaller increase. To give you an example, Minneapolis is scheduled to get a $176,000 increase. Their increase would be $5,000 less. They would get a $170,000 increase. Duluth would get, instead of getting a $35,000 increase, they would get a $34,000 increase. So nobody would be losing aid from where they are in 2016. It's just that Rice Lake would be getting a little bit more because of setting the base at $10 per capita. There's some nice symmetry to $10 per capita. For one thing, if you take current town LGA, town LGA right now statewide averages $10 per capita. So it'd be like saying you get to at least start with the average town LGA per capita. The other advantage to using the $10 per capita is the most that any city can go down in a given year in LGA is $10 per capita. So if you give them a starting point of $10 per capita and the new town, the new city has enough tax base to say that they don't need any aid, then they won't get any aid. So there's some symmetry that goes with this $10.
Thank you, Ms. Dalton. Stellar performance on your explanation. As always, the first time, members, I've ever heard LGA and symmetry in the same sentence. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And looking through the, I'm glad that we got the information about the increases. That apparently Minneapolis receives an eighth of all the increases since they're having an eighth cut of the 40K. For, you know, later it might be interesting to see what cities and why they are getting the increases. Right now I'm curious, because this is setting up LGA and it's setting a base, and the materials include a comparison of the St. Louis County average, which is over 320% the state average per capita. What factors are there in St. Louis County causing it to be over three times the state average? And that would help me understand what factors may be with the city and in relevance to its per capita.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, without being able to go into a lot of detail on all of the cities that are in St. Louis County, one of the things I would say is that they tend to have a lower than average tax base per capita, and that has a fairly major impact on the amount of aid that they are getting.
Goes back to the formula. Okay, Reza Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And first of all, Representative Murphy, I'm not very happy with you. You're a former social studies teacher. I'm a social studies teacher. I teach state and local government. And now I've got to change my notes because the number of townships now would be 17, 9, or whatever. And cities, how many cities? 854, 855. But I'm going to have to go back, spend some time, and change my notes on this. So I'm not very happy about that. But I do support the bill. this really has some big ramifications because we're setting about $10 right now, which is about equal to township aid. But let's say you went to a closer average of $200 or $300. Let's say you just started out that way. In this instance, you'd be getting about $800,000. Let's say you went up to $200. It'd be about $800,000 of local government aid. That would be huge. And one thing I think we need to think about is the number we set here when new cities come in, would that create incentives for townships if they see this huge windfall of local government aid down the road saying, maybe we'll become a city? So I guess this is really an important debate that's going to have some more large-reaching ramifications and how you might phase things in. I don't know what the answer is, Mr. Chair, but it is And, you know, I wonder what the township folks would have to say about that, too, because, like, in this instance, the city, I think your general property tax about $1.2 million. So, you know, if you were to go to $800,000, that would be, you know, reducing property taxes by two-thirds, which is be great. But what are the incentives for all of a sudden this township that might be facing some problems? Okay, let's become a city. And then I've got to change my notes a lot more than that. And just so anyway, that's a, just a comment there.
That's assuming sure. property taxes go down, Representative Mark.
Yes, that's true.
Thank you. Members, other questions? Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, and just in response to Representative Marquardt, I'll be happy to help you with your class notes because I have many files still available to be consulted. But it does have huge ramifications. And in fact, you know, one of the reasons I've been here is because of another new city that came about in 1976. The bicentennial city of Minnesota was Hermantown. And the same, very same situation was that because the larger city by the Big Water wanted to expand a little bit, they looked at part of Hermantown to take. And the same thing just happened as the mayor very politely and statesmanlike stated, the big city came to talk about just part of the township. But the township base is the 36 square miles that was established by the land ordinance of 1785. For the Great Lakes states.
That social studies is coming back again.
And that's the core of the whole way that all the states, west of the Mississippi, east of the Mississippi, south of the Great, Great Lakes, were established. The township was the main government and the main domination of how to get land grants from the United States government. And it was 36 square miles. The sector, one section set aside for schools, four sections set aside for governmental uses, and that persists around. And so when other cities have difficulties and they look at the townships that are around them, they really should look at the whole township and not just the part that has an economic interest that would aid the big, and not cut off the main homesteaders that were up in the corners, because their grandchildren are the ones that are living in the close sections that are economically. The relatives are there. The community is there. You can't try to divide it. And so that's what their voters said to the administrative law judge that was there and said, we want to stay our own entity. But then here we are talking about how do we get our fair share? How do we get our share? And not with upsetting other town, other cities that justifiably are part of the formula and created the formula that works. But if you look at the five cities that are in my district now, there's a great variance in what their LGA is.
Okay, thank you, Representative Murphy. And I think Representative Marquardt hit a sweet spot there. Mayor Werner.
If I could, in just to feed off of what was previously stated, as we sat and then I listened to Representative Murphy talk about the act that created townships in the Northwest, I would tell you that I had immediate flashbacks to when I sat in her classroom and she was telling me the same thing.
Same notes, too, right?
Same notes. But I would also tell you I'm not the only one here that sat in her classroom. So there are others here present today. But
at the table.
At the table. So it It is what it is. Again, to restate the facts, and these are facts, we've had a good working relationship with the City of Duluth in the past, and we continue to have it today. As far as any animosity, I don't believe it's there. But again, the citizens of Rice Lake, because under township law, they're not allowed to have a voice as far as a referendum. The only way they could respond is to show en masse, and they did that at the administrative hearing, plus the three public hearings. And they were very vocal. If any of you have attended town meetings, you know that citizens become very vocal at township meetings. And we had said as board supervisors that we would listen to what the voice of the citizens were. But the facts bore it out that the northern two-thirds of the township that would have remained would not have been able to sustain itself because it is less population, less tax base. And the surrounding townships at that time came online and officially told those people that they would not incorporate those into the other townships, so they would have been a standalone entity. But again, the citizens of Rice Lake said that they wanted to remain a community unto themselves because they had been for so long. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Werner. Representative Simonson, and then members, I want to move to Representative Gunther's bill, if we can. Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very quickly for Ms. Dalton. Oftentimes we see runs out into the future, and we're talking, I think, about page 17 here in this bill. But as you look into the future, maybe you've done this calculation or can do it in your head, but as you look into the future, as you apply the formula that's in current law to pay 2018, and identify what that gap is, can you just give me a sense of what their LGA payment would it, I mean, would they be looking at an increase, a decrease going forward, you know, assuming all things stay flat and the formula doesn't change? Do you have a sense of that?
Ms. Dalton, good question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simonson, this Rice Lake, because it will have still, even if you pass this bill, would still have such a large aid gap, would only have their aid increase in any year. Their aid would not decrease any time in the foreseeable future. How much that aid would increase would depend on how much money is actually in the LGA appropriation. If you put another $10 million into the LGA appropriation, they would get a very large increase. But if the money stays where it is, essentially, there's only about $2 to $3 million that are being redistributed every year, but they would always get some portion of that $2 to $3 million for the foreseeable future.
Thank you.
Thank you. So it sounds like, we're Representative Marquardt, we're not creating that incentive for townships to jump in with at least this level of LGA funding, which is probably good. Okay. Thank you, members. Thank you, Representative Murphy.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mayor Werner. And with that, the chair lays over House File 3602. Next, Representative Gunther and House File 3383. Representative Whalen moves House File 3383 to be laid over. And Representative Whalen moves the A1 amendment to the author's amendment to House File 3383, which that A1 amendment, Representative Gunther, welcome, and welcome to the fine citizens of Medelia, and you brought in another representative here too, Representative Cornish. Welcome. The A1 amendment is before us. Representative Gunther, do you want to talk quickly about the A1 amendment that Representative Whalen moved?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Brent Christensen, and I'm here for the City of Medelia.
Welcome, Mr. Christensen.
We had a number of blank numbers that were being inserted by the A1 amendment, so that's just filling the blanks. And then line 1.3 changes the date before July 1st of 2018. That's because of the damage and the loss of the buildings, the property taxes for those buildings don't kick in, the new ones don't kick in until that time. So we just made that correction.
Thank you. With that, any discussion on the amendment, members, author's amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion passes. The A1 amendment 2, House File 3383 is adopted. Representative Gunther, welcome. Would you introduce the bill as amended, please?
I would. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. On February 3rd, Madeira had a devastating fire in a snowstorm. The result was a loss of jobs. 8 businesses were burned up. Gone, many were out of work. And the town came up with a new slogan, Madeira Strong. And with your help, it will recover. And that describes the bill for me.
Thank you, Representative
Gunther. We have a video at this time. We would like to show everybody what really happened.
Representative Gunther, is Mr. Christensen maybe going to kind of lead the discussion on the video or just going to kind of run it? Mr. Christensen, if you will lead us, please.
Mr. Chairman, this video is pretty self-explanatory. It's just a 40-second clip to describe what happened that day and show you a little visual of what our community looks like now.
A devastating fire left a scar in the historic heart of a small town, the town of Madeira, destroying 8 businesses. And now, for the first time, we are seeing video from first responders as they arrived on the scene. Fox 9's Ted Howard joins us now. And Ted, this video really showing us how dramatic this was.
How dramatic it was, and also, Amy, how brave the firefighters and the first responders were who responded to that fire. Both dash and body cam video give us a look at the fire, including an explosion, the one you see right there. Madeira Police releasing the video, and the chief telling us the images from last month fill him with pride.
911 emergency.
If the callers could see the future, they would have said their city had changed forever.
There's a fire on Main Street in Madeira.
But at 2:29 a.m., they only knew this.
Could you hit a second page for us, please?
The volunteer Madeira Fire Department was also there in minutes. The fire growing larger and more dangerous. Watch this backdraft explosion send debris and black smoke across the street toward firefighters. Here it is in slow motion.
Mutual aid request for Madeira City.
120 to St. James Fire. You're needed with Bristol Fire. You're needed.
100 to Lake Crystal. Need for a business on Main Street.
Despite a blizzard closing streets, despite freezing temperatures.
Waterfield Fire. You're needed. LaSalle Fire. Mutual aid is needed.
100 firefighters would show up.
On speed fire. Tankers are needed.
One of the firefighters there is volunteer Madeira fireman Ryan Vischer. That's him staring at the fire in shock because he's fighting a fire at his own business.
Obviously, it's very powerful stuff. I think it's important for the public to see just how difficult it was to fight this fire from start to finish.
7 hours after the first 911 call, the fire was under control. 8 businesses lost.
We're going to need a lot of help.
And, as is made clear by firefighters' audio, the town that would adopt the slogan, Madeira Strong, following the fire,
thanks for the heads up, Jim,
was strong all along.
I'm very proud of everything that everybody did.
The Madeira police chief told me the fact no one was seriously injured was, quote, nothing short of a miracle. And he said another reason he released this video was to get other small towns with historic business districts planning for what he called a worst-case scenario.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to show that video.
Thank you, Mr. Christensen. Go ahead, Mr. Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, members, I think you saw in the video that we lost a huge chunk of our Main Street. And I'm reminded of that disaster every time I sit in my office and I look out the window. Many small towns around the country, a disaster of this magnitude would be enough to bring a town to its knees, but not ours. Madeira is a vibrant community of 2,300 people who are committed to the entire community's long-term viability. Before the fire, we did not have a single vacant building in our downtown. I'm proud to appear before you today and tell you that every one of our businesses has a temporary location and is working towards rebuilding. Every one of them is up and running today, with the exception of Plaza Fiesta, our most outstanding Mexican restaurant, which should be going on the city's golf course very soon. In addition, every one of our property owners is committed to rebuilding, knowing full well that as soon as they build, they will lose value the minute it's completed. That's the kind of community that we have. They didn't take their insurance money and run. They're staying and rebuilding. their insurance isn't going to be enough, and that's why we're here today. And this fire costs us so much more than just the buildings that were lost. Our remaining businesses have been affected seriously as well. One couple recently opened a store where they refurbished and sold used furniture, and they had to close last week because the traffic in downtown Medelia wasn't enough to keep them going. My family owns the Medelia Theater, and it was an old theater built in 1939, and we reopened it in 1991, and we show first-run movies for $5. The first 5 weeks after our fire were the worst 5 weeks since we reopened the theater. Movie patrons come to our theater from as far as 40 miles away, and largely because of the Mexican restaurant. They'll come and have dinner and a movie in our small town, and this is having a serious impact on our businesses. Medelia is known as a can-do community, and we will rise from the ashes, but we need your help. This bill does not take sales tax money from the state. Instead, it lessens the tax burden to assist with rebuilding and does not collect sales tax on items that would have not been necessary to purchase if not for the fire. We ask you to support this bill and help Medelia get back on its feet. And to explain some of the more intricacies of the economic development part of it, I'll let the other testifiers speak to that.
Thank you, Mr. Christensen. Representative Gunther?
We have another amendment, the A4 amendment.
I don't know if we have the A4 in front of us, Representative Gunther, do we? Does anybody have the A4 amendment? We've got the A1, and that has been applied to the bill, Representative Gunther. Maybe staff can get the A4 amendment copy for us. Do you have a copy, Representative Gunther?
We do.
Okay, staff will get that that copied off for us, Representative Gunther, as you're describing things here.
Okay, you want to describe your name?
Mr. Chairman, Ed Cheetah, I'm a development consultant from Mankato, and I came to the project. The local businesses called me, and they very much wanted to reinvest in the downtown, and they were trying to determine. They said, well, we have the insurance proceeds, we can build the building, but if we do that, can we actually afford to be there? And so we talked about some ways. They were really hit, kind of, as I said, there in three areas. There were costs that they had to face both up front and over time. First, the value to build a new building to replace it is about $4 million. They had approximately about $400,000 in taxable market value there previously. Costs of construction and everything require that. Working with the county assessor, working with the builder, we try to come up with good numbers to estimate the value of a new building. And we came up with something in the neighborhood of $2 million. So these owners are willing to make 100% investment of their $4 million for something, when it's opened, is going to be worth in the neighborhood of $2 million. Nonetheless, even at $2 million, their previous total property tax bill collectively over that property was about $10,000. A $2 million building will carry approximately an $80,000 tax bill, property tax bill. That's going to go back on small businesses, restaurant, beauty shop, other businesses. The question they asked me was fairly straightforward. They said, we're interested in being back in the downtown. We'll put our money into the downtown. Is there any rate in the downtown in a situation similar to what we were before in terms of our operating costs, you know, especially with regard to the property taxes? Then we tried to solve that question locally. We looked at abatement, we looked at tax increment. What was inescapable is the commercial properties and the state levied property tax. So hence the examination and the request for 15 years, made it along the lines of what you could get with abatement. And we decided just to ask for the exemption overall. I mean, we get abatement locally, that's a course that we would go, but it doesn't address the state. So we looked at just an exemption for that. Then there was one other cost involved that is not, as I said, they got nearly everything covered for reconstruction and cleanup there. There's approximately a half a million dollars for cleanup. Now, originally, they were projected to pay about $1 million to after the fire to clean this up, because when a building burns down, these old buildings, it's automatic that you have hazardous waste in there. You have some asbestos, you have lead-based paint. The initial estimate came because they had to haul this to Mankato and pay for hazardous waste, and that was not fully insurable. Brown County, to its credit, neighboring county, stepped in and said, we have a residency requirement. We will waive that. We also have a certified landfill. And they've stepped up and literally provided $500,000 of relief. The bill drops from $1 million to about $500,000 for that. $265,000 of that will be covered by insurance, but there is a shortfall of $235,000 in actual cash that the owners have to come up with. So in order to kind of get them back to where they would like to get or approximate that, that's the what we did behind the scenes and everything to give them an opportunity to open their businesses up again and get them in at approximately the costs that they were previously. And that's the reason for the request and the numbers behind those.
Thank you, Mr. Cheetah. Members' questions. Mr. Hines, can you talk us through the mechanics of the bill? Or you'd be the one that...
Mr. Chair, I think maybe Ms. Dalton and I will split it just to say Section 1 simply basically provides an exemption for property taxes for 15 years for these properties that were damaged in the fire, and the language just specifies the conditions needed to qualify of the city and the fire damage itself. So it's a 15-year property tax exemption for those, I believe they said, 8 properties.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Section 2 is the sales tax exemption. It's actually a 2-year exemption, so the construction materials must be bought by July 1, 2018. The tax is paid at the time the materials are purchased, and then the business owner applies for the refund, and it does apply whether the materials are bought by the owner of the business or by a contractor or subcontractor or builder. Section 3 provides an extra $80,000 a year in LGA payments for 15 years to the city. And Section 4 actually increases the city LGA appropriation by $80,000 a year for that same 15-year period. So this is not going to have an impact on LGA in any other city.
Can you say that again, Ms. Dalton?
Section 3 provides an increase of $80,000 per year in LGA payments, starting with aids payable next year to Medelia, and the LGA appropriation is also increased, that's in current law, is also increased by $80,000 a year for that same 15-year period. So this means that there will be no impact on the amount of aid going to any other city.
Okay, thank you. Questions, members? Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curious, I didn't see anywhere here. Did I miss it in the report? What's the total loss of taxable value from the fire?
The taxable value,
Mr. Cheetah,
was about, Mr. Chairman, and, the taxable value prior to the fire was approximately $400,000 on these properties, and they paid approximately $10,000 per year total property taxes over that. Those businesses.
Representative Hertas.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. So to be clear, what I heard, the sum of the 8 businesses had a taxable value of $400,000, and the sum of the taxes due and payable of those 8 businesses was about $10,000?
That
Mr. Cheetah.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions, members? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Ms. Dalton. Last year, I believe the our sales tax exemption for businesses for capital improvement was a point of purchase sales tax exemption. So logistically, would it be, do you think, let's see, how can I phrase this? Would it be, I think personally it would be best for those businesses and contractors to keep that money right in their pocket instead of send it in the state, and the state has to send it back to them as a refund. And we did pass that capital improvement sales tax exemption at the point of purchase. Is this something that could be easily done in this scenario?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, I would actually defer to the department. Normally, we do these as a refund in construction exemptions because of the fact that there may be multiple people purchases for the actual building, and because it might be a contractor, a subcontractor, or a builder who's actually purchasing the materials, and to ensure that the actual benefit goes to the owner of the property. It's better to have the tax paid by those contractors. They have to report how much they paid to the building owner, and then the owner actually applies for the refund and gets the refund directly. So it's more of a way to, number one, make sure that the actual amount that's going to get refunded definitely gets to the owner and isn't pocketed by the contractor or the subcontractor, but it's also to make sure that they're that the materials that are being purchased exempt actually get used in that business, the exempt property.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. Yeah, that makes sense, I suppose, whatever logistically is best, I suppose. But in the scenario, as a business owner, he has a contractor that does most of the work, but as a business owner, he may go buy a couple of products as well, supplies for his building. I'm just thinking, I have over 100-year-old building in Delano, downtown Delano, heart historic town, and just when I heard this story, it was very heart-wrenching, and certainly could happen to any community in that respect. So I sympathize, and my prayers and thoughts were with you all in Medelia. But as a business owner, if I was to have a contractor do the work, I may go buy a couple of products and supplies myself in help of rebuilding my building. It seems to be a lot of paperwork and a lot of submissions of receipts, tax receipts, for that sales tax.
And I think, Representative McDonald, this bill will be heard probably in Representative David's committee as well, and so we can have that discussion around the sales tax stuff then. That would be probably a good time to have that.
Since I'm on that committee, Mr. Chair, I'll then end the questions. I'll wait for that committee.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. Other questions, members? Okay. Well, Mr. May would like to testify from the assessors. Anyone else that would like to testify on this bill, if you would, please come down. But otherwise, welcome Mr. May.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom May, and I'm representing the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. We certainly don't have any problem with disaster relief bills. We've seen many, many of them over the years. The one thing we do have a problem with is Section 1 of this bill, which creates a property tax exemption for 15 years. Our position statement for the 2016 legislative session has one item that reads, MAO believes adjustments to market values, such as limitation on assessors' estimated market values, acquisition values, deferments, exclusions, or exemption, creates inequities between taxpayers. We've always had that position, and we would still have that regarding Section 1 of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. May. Mr. May, what's normal? What normally happens in these communities in terms of the exemption that's offered when we have these disasters?
Mr. Chair, typically exemptions aren't what's followed. There's abatements, local option abatements that can be done by the local authorities. There's also some immediate disaster relief for those properties that are affected by fires if they're over 50% destroyed. There's a local option, and there's a state option. So those are the ways that typically these disasters are handled. And certainly, just like the Mille Lacs case that was earlier, there was a refund of state general tax that funded this type of thing. And I can't recall a total 15-year exemption in these cases in the past. I think this is maybe sets a precedent.
Thank you, Mr. May. Mr. Hines, you put together a chart for us. Does anybody have and I asked Mr. Hines if he would put together kind of a summary of what's been done in the past for different disasters. I know we've had one in my district in the past, and there's been one in virtually every part of Minnesota. But Mr. Hines, can you kind of outline what our history has been here at the legislature in helping communities like this?
Mr. Chairman, I did try to put this, Ms. Dalton assisted me with this, try to put this history together kind of quickly, and I'm not sure it's comprehensive, so I would caution that, but we did go through and try to find as many of these kind of situations as we could, and mostly what I would say we found, and of course, typically we're dealing with situations that are different from this, where there's a broad-based situation such as a flood, where there's lots of properties involved, and there's even, in most of those cases, some kind of a presidential disaster declaration or the declaration by the state executive board, and that kicks in certain economic development and other kinds of grants. So this was just looking at the property tax type side of the equation, not so much any grants they might be getting from, like, through deed or some other economic development organizations. But for the most part, assistance to the actual properties were limited to, you know, the year, typically the year the disaster occurs and the following year. And that's kind of, you know, the logic of that is that the assessment of the property is based on January 2 of a given year. So when a disaster occurs, obviously there's a current property taxes on the property that were based on the full value, and now that value is gone or substantially diminished, and the assessment has already been set for the next taxes payable year. So those are the 2 years in which the tax is going to be based on the full value if something isn't done, and the legislation typically has intervened to knock down the tax to adjust for that, but nothing has gone on beyond those 2 years. And at that point, of course, if there's no value, there's nothing to tax. So it's sort of the property tax system self-adjusts for that. Now, as I alluded to, some of these programs also had some kind of economic development assistance that you're not seeing on this chart, and that's even more difficult to try to track because there are so many different kinds of programs or types of reimbursements. But that would typically be more where you'd find the kind of assistance they're looking for here. We did also capture in the sort of the middle column if there was any kind of direct aid to the jurisdiction, and you'll see that there typically is, again, for a one-year basis, some kind of assistance based on the loss in tax base times the value per se. So I think I'll leave it at that unless there's questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hines. Members, questions? We do have Representative Gunther. The A4 amendment has arrived. Would you like to apply that to the bill, Representative Gunther? I'm thinking you probably would. Representative Kosnick moves the A4 amendment. Mr. Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, the A4 amendment basically covers up what Mr. Cheetah talked about, the difference from what the insurance will cover to clean up the site and what is needed to clean it up. And as Mr. Cheetah stated, we were able to work a heck of a deal with Brown County and allow all of our stuff to be taken over there. And that's a huge burden, $236,000, that they're not going to be able, the property owners aren't going to be able to handle on their own.
Thank you. Okay, we did see there's also, we're going to need, Representative Kosnick move the amendment. We're going to need to amend the amendment, line 1.1. We need to change the Senate file to the House file. And the chair would move, we amend the amendment by striking on line 1.1 SF number 3029 and inserting HF 3833. 3383, my dyslexia kicked in here.
And Mr. Chair, you want to delete the word senator as well?
The answer is yes. I'm trying to figure out where. Oh, yes, at the very beginning of the line, yes. So we'll strike senator. Thank you, Representative Pinto. So strike the word senator on line 1.1, strike the Senate file and the Senate file number 3029 and insert HF 3383. Any discussion on the amendment to the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The amendment has been amended. Other discussions on the amendment as amended? Mr. Cheetah.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to comment back a little bit on this issue of 15 years. Believe me, we were concerned about this. And a great deal of effort was put into trying to solve this through other means and through locally as well. The issue really is that we had numerous representatives from the federal government. We had state representatives down there. Deed came down. They examined their programs. Bottom line is when you went through federal programs, there's no relief offered there. There's no money. There were some offers for loans to rebuild, but we've got insurance proceeds to rebuild. So the issue here is that these gentlemen, the owners of the business, and that's really what I want to talk about, want to reinvest in the downtown. They're willing to spend $4 million to go back in, fill in a big hole in the downtown, and we looked at it kind of like a tax increment philosophy, you know, but for the insurance proceeds, but for mitigating this large property tax increase. I can't speak to these other disasters. I don't know the specifics. I do know in some instances they got assistance from deed. I also know that if you went back, you probably would look and say, did their property taxes go up sevenfold at the end of the day? That's what's happening here. And that's what's driving the request. And it's very fair to state that if we can't solve those problems, there will be a hole in the downtown. Will these businesses be elsewhere? Perhaps. But it is a very real issue here, and so it isn't something that we took lightly. We looked at it. We understand we get a lot of this through the abatement, and it's really fundamentally the state property tax, but by wrapping it together, it solves a lot of administrative issues and everything. It's just an outright exemption, and that's the nature of the request, and that's why we're requesting it. Thank you.
Mr. Cheetah. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and you said the magic word abatement. The duck came down, you know, right. Today's word. So can you just review for me, what is the local portion of this? I see the state portion that you're coming in asking for relief for these properties and for the downtown. What's the local portion?
I don't have the
Mr.
tax.
Mr. Cheetah?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have the tax rates in front of me, but I would think that the state's portion, I think, falls somewhere in the 25% to 30% range of the $80,000 of the new tax. The rest of it would be the city, the county, and the school district, and the miscellaneous, something like Region 9 or something in there.
Mr. Christensen?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dabney, I'm also on the school board in Medillia, and this does not affect ours because our aid comes in the form of per pupil units, and that's not affected. So the school board or school district is out of that mix.
Representative Dabney.
The first gentleman tried to answer the question, but I need a little bit more information. What is the city putting in to help make this work?
Mr. Cheetah.
And the structure of that, to the best of your ability.
See if I can answer that correctly. What the city would be, I need a little help here, is exactly what the city is putting into it has been all of the efforts in terms of restoring the public infrastructure that's there. They've made every effort. Are they actually contributing dollars directly to these businesses? Not at this time in that manner. It would be through the property tax system that they'd be foregoing as well the property taxes under this scenario.
Mr. Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dabney, the part that the city is playing right now is relocating the businesses. So through the EDA and through the Chamber of Commerce, we've made sure that all 8 businesses had a place to go. So the city's focused right now on the displaced businesses, and we're here to talk about getting the buildings rebuilt. So they're going to be involved in that part of it, and they're going to be active in that part of it. The contribution or what the city is going to contribute at that point, we haven't quantified yet.
Representative Dabney?
This bill will be going to full committee?
This bill will be laid over, and I assume that Representative or Chair Davids will probably hear the bill in his committee too, Representative Gunther. So
right.
We'll hear it again there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, gentlemen.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one other little detail question I'm curious about. So there's eight businesses here. How many of those businesses were owners of the property, or were some of them tenants?
Mr. Christensen.
Mr. Chair, Representative, there were six property owners and eight businesses. Off the top of my head, and I can, we've got some of the two of the business owners here. I believe four of the businesses were tenants. A hairstyle, a hair salon, the Mexican restaurant. I can't remember the other two. So I believe it's four tenants and four owners. Is that, I'm being told that's correct.
Representative Hertas?
Thank you. That answered my question.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I realize you want to move on, so just a quick question. I would presume, maybe wrongly or rightly, but the city most likely would waive the permits and sack and whack fees for the rebuilding? Is their contribution? Is
Mr. That Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McDonald, we're going to have a talk with them about that. We have not had that conversation yet, but I'm assuming that's going to, we've taken that as an assumption that that's going to happen.
Mr. Chair,
McDonald.
Well, just encourage them from this committee, our tax committee, that we encourage the mayor and the council to do that. I'm sure that they will, and you know that's the least they could do is waive those fees for the business owners is if we could do this for them. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, if I could have Mr. Christensen just introduce real quick, if they could just stand, one of them is a firefighter and business owner there. If you folks could just stand and let Mr. Christensen introduce them.
Great idea, Representative Cornish. Thank you, Mr. Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, from the left, that's Brian McCabe, owner of Brian McCabe Insurance Agency. Next to him is Ryan Bisher, the firefighter and owner of Hope and Faith. Next to him is his favorite oldest daughter, Sydney. And next to Sydney is Carla Angus, who is the executive director of the Minnesota Area Chamber of Commerce.
Thank you for coming. Thank you. I want to thank you, Representative Gunther, Mr. Christensen, Mr. Cheetah, Representative Cornish, and thank you all for coming. Our hearts go out to you and what you have gone through, and we also applaud your Minnesota Get Her Done attitude as you worked through that, very proud of what we saw here and what I've heard from Representative Gunther as well. With that, thank you all, and with that, House File 3383 will be laid over.
Thank you.
Okay, members, we have one more bill. This one shouldn't take a whole lot of time. Representative Hertas is going to present Representative Kelly's bill, House File 3176, and Representative Hertas moves House File 3176 to be laid over. Representative Hertas.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is an agency bill provided by the Metropolitan Council. The Senate file companion is carried by Senator Carlson, Senate File 2371. Members, the Metropolitan Council seeking authorization to issue about $82 million of bonds, $40 million for 2016 and $42 million in 2017, in regional bonds for regional transit capital needs. The Council must receive legislative authorization to issue these bonds, and the regional transit bonds are not state general obligation bonds, but they're funded by the Council's transit debt service levy, which is collected by the transit taxing area. The regional transit bonds support the small capital projects of all the region transit providers in the seven county region, including Metro Transit, Suburban Transit Providers, Metro Mobility, and Transit Link Dial-A-Ride. Fleet replacement is driving this request, generating the greatest demand for regional transit funded transit bond funds, and buses are replaced on a fixed schedule aligned with the FTA guidelines. The requested bonding authorization has historically been included in the public finance articles of the omnibus tax bills or the transportation finance bills, and the bonds have been authorized by the legislature since 1989. With me, I have staff contact with Government Affairs Director Judge Shetland, and he can answer any additional questions that members might have about the Met Council's bond request.
Thank you, Representative Hertas. Welcome, Mr. Shetland.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, my name is Judd Shetland, and I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Met Council, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Again, we're back with our regional transit capital bonds request, and as Representative Hertas mentioned, we've carried these bills oftentimes in the public finance article of the tax bill. When Representative Holberg carried these bills for us when she was in the legislature, they ended up in the transportation finance bills a couple times, and then last time we were back in the public finance bill. So we do very much appreciate it. Again, most of these bonds are used in order to match federal funds that we receive for bus fleet replacement. And for instance, New Flyer, which is a bus manufacturer based in St. Cloud in Crookston, we purchase many of those buses, so a lot of that money in turn goes back into the Minnesota economy as well. But this isn't just for Metro Transit. This replaces the vehicles for Metro Mobility, which is ADA mandated federal medical assistance type service here in the metro area. It's for the suburban transit providers, which is Maple Grove Transit, Plymouth Transit, Minnesota Valley, and Southwest Transit. And I know Mr. Clark from the suburban providers is here to lend his support to this bill as well. And then it's also for our Transit Link service, which goes beyond the areas within the that have regular out service. So areas like Representative Vogel's area have Transit Link service. But for all of the other metro members, it really does go to provide that those funds that we're able to replace the fleet. It also goes toward park and rides. It goes to support facilities. But just to be clear, this is not; these are not funds used to build the Southwest Corridor or the Botno Corridor. And so I just want to make sure folks know that this is really for kind of small capital type bus fleet replacement that we are required to do based on the FTA and federal guidelines. So I can answer any questions you have, but really appreciate the opportunity to be here. And I know that we're under a tight time frame, so thank you for your support.
Thank you, Mr. Shetton. And Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. You had mentioned the park and ride lot expansion. Is there kind of an outlined process of where new park and rides would go, and how do you get on that list? And
Mr. Shetton.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kosnick, we have the large facility in Lakeville that you may be referring to. That actually was built as part of the Urban Partnership Agreement back in 2008. However, we have a proposal for the Orange Line, which I know former Representative and current Commissioner Holberg is concerned about not having the capacity to be able to serve the amount of ridership that will be coming from Lakeville, Newmarket, Elko, Northfield, and that type of area. And this is the type of funding that we would be able to use to match a federal grant that we would get in order to expand that park and ride facility. And so this is exactly that type of funding that we need in order to be able to build that. So, and Mr. Chair and Representative Kosnick, yes, we do have a plan based on where those future investments would go, and I can certainly speak to you about that or go into more detail if you'd like.
Thank you. So, members, we have this before us because these bonds are paid off with property tax. That's why it's before the committee today. Quick question, Mr. Shetton, and hopefully we can adjourn on time here. What have those amounts done in terms of trends over time? Have you been right around 82 million, or is it increased, decreased, been flat? What are you seeing?
Mr. Chair and members, going back to at least when I have been working on these bills, going back to 2000 and the year 2000, I guess, there was about a 1% adjustment that was made each year to these bonds in order to basically have the rate remain the same across the region based on the growth of the region. And back in 2014, there was an adjustment made for inflation because we weren't able to keep up with the cost of the bus replacement that was taking place. So that changed in 2014, and that change applies today. And we are able to make that, we're making that adjustment based off of the inflationary cost on buses. Also, and then the area that aren't bus purchases, we apply the implicit price deflator to that. And so that adjustment has been made forward, but it is also managed amongst the council's overall property tax levy. So this is not indicative of how our levy is done. It's managed within our overall property tax levy.
Thank you. Other questions, members? Representative Hertaus, closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. And it is my understanding, I don't think you had this map in the packet. This shows the seven-county metro area, the areas highlighted in green. It's my understanding that those are the transit capital levy communities, so it's not a county-wide levy. It's only levied on the communities that are served by the service.
Thank you, Representative Hertaus. Representative Hertaus, any other comments? Otherwise, I think we're ready to move on and adjourn. With that, the chair, thank you, Mr. Shetnin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The chair does lay over House File 3176. And with that, members, the meeting is adjourned.